You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. There's cause and effect that happens in the world. This is the time of year when parents have an immense amount of leverage. Because all the, you know, in March or April, you can't really pull that line out. It's like, Christmas, they'll forget it by then. But right now, the pressure's on children everywhere because there's this thing called cause and effect, right? It's the science of causality, that this X causes Y. If you do something, there's a reaction. It has an effect to it. And so even in the song, I'm telling you why, because kids everywhere want to know why. If you say, clean up your room, what do they say? Why? And then what do you say? Because I said so. That doesn't quite cut it, but this helps leverage a little bit to say, because Santa's coming to town. Oh, because it has an effect, that causality has an effect of what I might find in my stocking on Christmas morning. This cause and effect is learned even before Santa comes into the picture. I have a little one-year-old grandson, you're about to find out here in a few months, but little granny, Mackenzie's always sending us pictures of Wellen, and he's sometimes, she'll FaceTime and he'll be at the little high chair and they have the tray, and he'll invariably have some avocado or some fruit, and all of a sudden you see him go. And look over, and he's experiencing cause and effect. And he's experiencing, if I keep doing this, what's the effect? And then he wants to see the causality of what mom's reaction will be. Right? And then sometimes, oh brother, here we go again, right? And so they're just checking out the consistency of the universe because they, you know, if you keep doing this over and over, it never goes up. That's kind of the cool thing, is they're just learning. They're learning cause and effect. They're learning gravity. They want to see if their world and universe is consistent. Oh, don't you want it to be? Don't you want it to be consistent? But they're also curious. I was talking to my buddy Adam, Dr. Adam Ayers, a while back, and we were talking about a story after we got back from a trip in Australia. We flew over Suffering for Jesus, right? We were doing missions in Australia, and we laid over in Hawaii. So we spent a couple of days there. At that time, I didn't want to leave my family, so Josh was 2 years old, going on three, and so he went with us. And we went to the beach, and Josh got stung by a what they call a blue bottle. He got stung by a jellyfish. And so all of a sudden he's in the water and he starts screaming, and all of a sudden there's this jellyfish stuck because he floated up against it and it burned his arm. And so I'm going to share with you the conversation that happened between Josh and I as a 2 years old. Josh says, why did the water burn me, Daddy? Like, that's not consistent with his universe. He goes in and the ocean's fun and you play around and you're wet, but it burned me. And me, that's me. It wasn't the water, it was a jellyfish that burned you. And so you're getting the cliff notes because I'm having to go, what's a jellyfish? You know, and it's like, well, why did the jellyfish do that, Daddy? Because you bumped into it. We're talking cause and effect, and all the whys with answers with because. Josh, but why? And this time, you know, his tears are coming down because it burned, and he's got a big welt on him, and me, it didn't mean to. But why did he? He's like, couldn't figure out why this jellyfish wanted to harm him. He was just having a fun time in Hawaii. Because I was out of answers, because that's just who he is. That's what they do. They float around, you bump into them, and they burn you. I find whys are insatiable. We have hundreds, or if not thousands, of them. We want to know why things work, why we're curious by nature. We want to know why things happen, why things operate, why they do. You better watch out. You better not cry. Don't pout. I'm telling you why. Don't we want to know why? because Santa's coming. Adam, we went on and we collaborated on this idea, this why, and he says, the things that I cannot get past, or the things we cannot get past in life, the things that always trip us up, the things that sit inside of our soul and fester, that at the heartbeat of that, of you peel back all those layers, at the heartbeat of that is this throbbing why. We have more questions than anyone on the planet can answer, don't we? We don't grasp whys very well, and they cause an ache inside of us. For the life of me, I can't explain to some people why certain people do certain things. You can't explain, why did she do that? Or why does he abuse, fill in the blank? Why is that person homeless? Why does someone get healed, someone doesn't? Why does someone get saved in the tornado? I remember when the Joplin tornado, I was like full of questions, and it's a wonderful thing to praise the Lord and go, man, the Lord's hand was like over that person. And then also, but we had people from this congregation that the Lord's hand wasn't over them. Why? The other night, I got the opportunity to go sit in the woods for a little bit, and blackbirds. Why? First of all. And what do blackbirds do? Caw, caw, caw. Crows all the time, right? They're just constantly caw, caw. And it's like throbbing in my head going, why are they doing that? I had a friend of mine once say, you know why you ever hear a dog barking off in the distance? It's like, yeah. It's like, you want to know why? Yeah. I don't know why. And that's the mystery of life. Why does a dog bark down the street? And sometimes you just want to know why. Or like a crow constantly going, caw, caw, inside of my head sometimes just, why? Why does this happen? Why are there tragedies? Why is all this stuff going on? On Sunday mornings, we've been studying through Genesis, and it's trying to explain to us some of the whys of beginning, like how the world came into be. Genesis means beginnings. And so it gives us everything from the beginning of creation, the beginning of the universe, the beginning of humankind, the beginning of sin, begins to answer a lot of our whys, the beginning of languages and nations, and from those family units, the hostilities that are still exist today. There's some of the answers to the why, but there's still thousands more, isn't there? We learn how all this stuff comes into being and why God created us and that there's a plan of redemption. All this stuff is happening. And then last week we came to Jacob and we talked a little bit about his wives. He had four ladies that ended up having 12 sons. Jacob's name gets changed to what? Israel. And through those four different women, he has 12 sons that become the 12 tribes of Israel. But a little bit of the backstory is we're going to project forward for a moment this morning. His favorite, anybody remember? You got to remember. Joseph. Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. That's why you got to remember. Joseph is the favorite son status. Now, why? Well, part of it because the Bible says he had him at an old age. But the other part of it was Jacob loved Rachel, Joseph's mom. And Joseph was born, and then there was Benjamin, the youngest. But Joseph was the favored son. And as a result of that, he got favored son status, and so he got the cool coat, basically. And we're going to pick up the story in Genesis chapter 37, starting at verse 1. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, note, by the way, it doesn't start with Reuben, the oldest, but it starts with Joseph. Joseph, a young man of 17, he was 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the son of Bilhah, and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about him. So he's telling on his brothers. Why? because he's their brother, because he just did. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word about him. Ooh, the Bible's full of dysfunctional families, isn't it? Some of you know that. You just got back from family dinner at Thanksgiving, right? But this is going to tell you the why they hated him. And so first of all, he tells on them. He gets a favorite son status. Why? Because dad just favored him, and that's why they hate him. Verse 5 says, Joseph had a dream, and then when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. Listen to this dream. He said to them, listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. Punk kid. That's not in the text. I just read that. His brother said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. Listen, he said, I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and even the stars were bowing down to me. Isn't that great, brothers? And they said, yeah, man, you're so cool. No. No, they did not. And then they figure out a way to get rid of the tattletale, the favored son, and they're going to throw him in a well because they want to, first of all, kill him. Reuben spares his life, and they throw him in a well and say, we'll just lie and tell dad that a wild beast ate him, and so we'll take this coat with some goat blood on it, and we'll take it back and say, you know, a beast got him. And then all of a sudden, they see some Ishmaelites coming, traders, and a caravan of them. And so Judah, remember this name, Judah talks him into selling him into slavery. How old's Joseph? 17. If anybody had an opportunity to ask questions why, it's probably Joseph. At 17, he goes into slavery. From Canaan to Egypt, he's going to walk now in chains, in bondage, whipped, beaten, whatever happens in those days to the slaves, because they're not kind to them. He's an object, he's an animal, and he's got 500-mile walk to go. It's going to take months, 3 months to get there. And that's how he starts the beginning of the rest of his life. Wouldn't you ask why on a long walk for 3 months in chains? Then he gets there, and you know the story, some of you know the story well. He gets there, and he gets traded into Potiphar's household, and Potiphar is a high official up in the court of Pharaoh. So now he's like, oh, well, at least if as slavery goes, at least you're inside and you're not out making brick and mortar out in the sun all day. And so he lands, if you will, a cush slavery job. And all the other slaves might say, why? But nevertheless, as soon as it seems like he's in the fast lane passing all the cars, guess what happens? Now Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him because he's handsome. He's still a slave, but he's handsome. And she tries over and over to seduce him, and he will not budge. He will not give in to her. And all of a sudden, she pulls a fast one on him, takes his cloak, and says he tried to rape her, and so they throw him in prison. Just when you think a little bit of relief, a lot more questions of why did this happen? Why is this, every time my life seems to start to get better, something else breaks. Goes south again. Then in prison, he works his way, because now there's some time passed, and he works his way back up into leadership, because that's apparently what he is. He just keeps leading in the midst of all this tragic existence. And then he remembers a cupbearer and the baker get sent down to prison. And Joseph, don't forget, he's a dreamer. He has dreams. They have dreams, and he interprets them. And sure enough, you know, the baker's going to lose his head, and the cupbearer's going to get his job back. And then he's like, hey, do me a favor. Don't forget me. I'm the one who interpreted this dream for you and got you out of here, kind of thing. And what happens? They forget him, and two more years pass, and you wonder why. If anybody could ask why, it would be Joseph in those times. Slave, prison, abused, accused of rape, innocent the whole time. Why? Then Pharaoh has dreams, and he has a couple bad dreams. And one of his particular dreams was, he says, I saw seven cows, fat cows, coming up out of the Nile, and then seven basically scrawny, ugly cows coming up out of the Nile, and it consumes them. And then he says, then I had another dream, and there was these seven really good, healthy heads of grain. They're sprung up, and then another, all of a sudden, there was these seven terrible, ugly again, bad-looking crops. And so then the cupbearer remembers, oh, there's a guy in prison, and he calls Joseph up, and Joseph interprets the dream to go, my friend, God is letting you know what he's about to do. There's no answer why. I'm just letting you know the reality of the situation. And God is going to allow, if you will, famine in the land. There's going to be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And he's just letting you know. And so you better be a prepper. And so then Joseph is put in charge of all of these preparations to save the day from the 7 years of famine. And then the famine spreads all the way back to Canaan. And who's in Canaan? His brothers and his dad. And we're going to pick up the story in Genesis 42. When Jacob, this is dad, when Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, I love this, why do you just keep looking at each other? There's the why. You know, there's 11 sons, grown men, looking around going, I don't know. Get in there and clean your room. No, he didn't say that. He continued, I've heard that there's grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us so that we may live and not die. Then 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain from Egypt, but Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with the others because he was afraid that harm might come to him. So Israel's sons were among those who went to buy grain, for there was famine in the land of Canaan also. Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the person who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. Prophecy fulfilled. Right? His dream come true. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. Where do you come from? He asked. From the land of Canaan, they replied, to buy food. Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. That's probably because he probably shaved and he's an Egyptian and he's grown up and he's probably, you know, manicured and handsome and all this stuff. And so it's been years past and they think he's all but dead and probably enslaved somewhere. They don't know that he came to Egypt. And so they don't recognize him. Verse 9 says, then he remembered his dreams about them and said to them, you are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected. Why do you think he said that? Well, you know, it could be revenge. That's a good opportunity. Like, I got you now. You're at my mercy. It could test them to see if they changed, maybe. But he wants to find out. There's something, a bigger agenda going on. He wants to know about his younger brother and his dad, doesn't he? And he keeps pressing them, and he kind of finds out information by, he keeps saying, you're spies, I know, and they're going, no, 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 and it's like, I'm going to keep you here, no, 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 send us back, we want to go to our dad. And note, verse 13 says, well, let's read it. But they replied, your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with their father, and one is no more. Now he's finding out answers. There's 10 of them. The younger stays back. Now he knows, or he maybe, because these guys are liars. They're connivers. They're deceitful. They're schemers. They're not good guys. They're the type of guy that would sell your own brother. And he knows. And it says, and one is no more. So he basically says, you got to bring your little brother to me. Why? This is the question. He wants to see if brother, little brother, and dad are alive. So his plan works, and so he manipulates them to make sure they bring back Benjamin. He keeps one of them. And then he sets a trap because he's still got bigger plans involved. So part of his trap is that when they come back and Benjamin, he sees Benjamin, he goes off in the corner and weeps for a little bit, and then he comes back out and he says, send them on their way, but put this gold goblet in Benjamin's sack because I got a plan. And so they're going down the road, then he sends his stewards after them and says, hey, go bring those guys back. And it's this ruse that they've stolen something, that Benjamin's stolen something. And so look at verse 44, chapter 44, verse 12. It says, then the steward proceeded to search, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Joseph had planted it there. He wanted to get to them. He wanted to get to his father. And so they now have to go back to the palace before Joseph again. And Joseph is using this whole plan, and he wants to get dad there. Then we're at chapter 44. Look at verse 33. Then Judah speaks. Judah has this long speech and then he ends it with, and he says, now then, please, let your servant remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. Verse 34 says, how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come on my father. It's like Judah speaks up and says, hey, let me be the slave. This would kill dad. He's already lost his favorite. Let me stay in his place. He would go to his death in complete misery. Judah's speech moves Joseph. Chapter 45, verse 1 says this. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all of his attendants, and he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Think about it for a moment. All the years of slavery, all the whys, all the dreams, all the brokenness, all the bondage, all the whippings, all the beatings, all the chains, all the accusations, all the filth, all the time in prison, and it's now all coming full circle, and he weeps, and it's loud, and he's mourning, and he's grieving. And all the unanswered whys come out in tears. Verse 3 says, so Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? He's still wanting to get to the answer. Is he really alive? Tell me the truth. Is this real? You keep saying it, but is he really alive? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Now it's like, now they realize, oh my goodness. We sold him into slavery. We're had. Then he said, listen to this. Aha, I got you. You're really going to get what you deserve now. It's my time for sweet revenge. Aren't you ashamed of yourselves? He didn't say any of that, did he? Some of you are going, he's not reading out the Bible. He didn't say any of that. Look at verse 4. We will read out of the Bible. Note what he says. And Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. That gets me. And when they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And then read that. And now, do not be distressed And do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. He didn't say, aha, don't you feel lousy, you dirty tricksters? He said, hey, don't be mad. Don't be mad with yourselves. All the little whys don't matter. There's a bigger why happening. When's the last time you forgave that freely? I know as Christians, we're required to forgive. We pray it in the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us of our trespasses as we forgive those who sin against us, right? So it's kind of a mandate. So sometimes we operate in that mandate to go, well, I want to be forgiven in heaven, so I got to forgive. I got to do the minimum requirement because that's what I'm supposed to do, right? I've got to. I'm a Christian. I'll forgive you, but I won't ever forget it. And we keep our relationships at bay and kind of imprisoned by our memories. Kind of in relationship restoration. Well, someday, maybe 3 or 4 years from now. But Joseph goes on, don't be angry at yourselves. God sent me here. Did Joseph forget what they had done? Couldn't. Probably has the scars to prove it. But Joseph understood that these are a whole bunch of little whys that he doesn't have the answers to, and there's a bigger why. There's a bigger why at the center of it all. And he even says God did this. Look at Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. It says this, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. Why am I in Egypt? To save lives. Why? Because people are going to starve to death if I don't have a bigger plan. God has bigger scope and breadth and depth than you and I can even fathom. And all the little whys fade off and they just like vapor. They go away when God comes into the picture and he goes, I got a big plan. You intended me to harm me, but God intended it for good. It was not you, it was God. That big why trumps all the little whys. And it shows God's wisdom and his strength and his power and his glory. Joseph knows they were wrong. Joseph knows they are relationally dysfunctional. They're a messed up family. They're not trustworthy. They're inconsistent. But he also knows that in the midst of his messed up family, God is in the middle of it all. And God is doing something with it because that's what God does. And Joseph understood that God wanted to save others, even if it cost him all of his dreams. Don't you think Joseph probably wanted to go back and spend time with his dad and his brother all those years in prison, all that time in slavery, even in Pharaoh's court or even in Potiphar's household? God had a plan, Joseph is saying. This is the big why. God has a plan. God had a plan for Egypt, for his messed up family, his brothers. God has a plan. And God has a plan for all the whys that you and I cannot answer. It includes all the I have no ideas. I've got tons of those, don't you? It includes, God's plan includes before creation. God's plan includes after creation is gone. And it includes a plan for you and a plan for me. I know. I get it. Sometimes we're like little kids. Why? It was 26 years ago. I can still see Josh's face so confused going, but why? Tears rolling down his cheeks going, why? Sometimes we go, I didn't do anything wrong. Why? And so sometimes it's our frustration and our anger isn't simple rebellion or just throwing a tantrum. Sometimes it's the pain of not knowing why. Sometimes it's feeling misunderstood and not knowing why. Sometimes it's the pain that just comes out when we really can't grasp why. But Joseph would tell you and I, God has a plan for your good. He'd tell me, He has a plan for your good, Wes. And God had a plan when He sent Jesus at Christmas. And we go, but why a baby? Beyond me. Theologically, we can say certain things, but why born in a stable? Why to a teenage girl, a virgin? Why? And then we know ultimately that because of Christmas, there's Easter. But why? Well, political reasons, yes. Appease the crowd, yes. Social disruption, of course. Pander to the crowd, of course, when they're yelling, crucify Him. Bad decisions, greed, 30 pieces of silver, His friends betraying Him. There's lots of whys why this all happened. Religious jealousy, and ultimately we could say, yeah, was it the hand of Satan? Yeah. There's all those are whys the cross happened, but there's more. Beyond all those little whys, there's a bigger why that trumps, that stands at the center of it all. And it's this conversation. Listen to this conversation, Jesus and us. Why? Because I want to save you. Why? Because I love you. Why? Because it's just who I am. That's why. And that's why we celebrate Christmas. That's why. Stand and pray. You may be here today with lots of whys. Lots of I don't knows. Lots of troubles in your heart and your soul. Questions of some whys that will never be answered, especially when it comes to relationship issues. But there's one why. All I can tell you is I believe there's one why that trumps all that other stuff. And that God has a plan. And when it feels like it's just broken, and I can't figure it all out, at the center of it is God. Joseph's life is a reminder to you and me that God is in control, and God knows why. And only God knows why. But He's for you, and He has good intentions towards you. Because He loves you. Because He said so. That's why. Father, Your word tells us that if we draw near to You, You will draw near to us. We come in this moment, at this time, and we lean in. We lean in with all of our questions, all of our doubts, all of our wonderings, and thousands of why. Why the world's a mess. Sin is an easy answer. Why in our own households, the brokenness. We have so many whys. Lord, help us to lay those whys at Your feet this morning. And know that You, like Joseph, had somehow the ability to see and perceive there's a bigger plan going on. Help us, Lord, to trust in Your plan. Just like Adam and Eve from the very beginning, if they could have trusted Your plan, not knowing all the answers, not knowing why You didn't want to eat of the fruit, and the enemy comes in and he tempts them to find out. Help us to trust in blind faith and blind hope. Help us to trust, Lord, that You're good and that's all that matters. And that You're true and that's all that matters. And that You love us and that's all that matters. And You died for us so that we might live forever. And that's ultimately all that matters. We ask for healing for the brokenhearted this morning. We ask for Your presence to strengthen us and undergird us, make us strong, steadfast, and sure. Govern our steps and heal our minds, the brokenness of memories, the brokenness of past experience, all the whys that have not been answered. Lord, we lay them again at your feet. And I pray for healing for my brothers and sisters. I pray for restoration. And I pray that joy will come in the morning. In Jesus' holy name, amen.